Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best in new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Hello, and do not adjust your radios. You are, in fact, listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live, and it's just me, Martin, this week. Hello, yes, and it's a bit of a change this week as Denise is away for the week. She's celebrating her birthday. I will be gallant and not tell you how old she is this birthday. As a result, I'm here on my own, and there hasn't been much happening this week either. So I've devoting this week's musical sections over to the composer Philip Glass, and I decided to kick off right from the start and just for once change around our opening music. So I hope you don't mind that that change to things. And that was the opening titles from Errol Morris's The Thin Blue Line. So this is going to be music heavy this week, just a few bits and pieces of chat, but I hope you're going to enjoy it. Philip Glass is seen as one of the most influential music composers of the late 20th century. He's composed operas, symphonies, concertos, and he's scored a number of feature films in his career. He's regarded as something of an avant-garde composer. His music very much in the minimalist category. I personally love lots and lots of his music, so I've tried to do a selection of his stuff across a range of films for today, and I hope you're going to enjoy it as the show gets a bit Radio 3 this week, so I hope you're going to go with it. And but we will be doing some things as we normally do, and we've got a bit of music gossip to kick the show off with. And you may remember a couple of weeks ago when we were doing the gossip bit, I was sounding off a bit that they were making, what was announced at the time was a remake of The Elephant Man, when we were talking about pointless remakes. Well, a little bit more information has come out about it this week, which maybe I might have to give it a bit more slack than what I was initially thinking that I'd give it. They've announced that the actor Adam Pearson is going to play Joseph Merrick in this new production. And Pearson, if you know, is the actor who suffers from neurofibromatosis, which has caused severe his head, his skull and his face is... It's quite physically disfigured, but he has been in such films as Under the Skin, and last year was in the Oscar-nominated A Different Man in quite a leading role. So, I mean, this is, if this goes ahead, this would be the first time of a disabled actor appearing in any Elephant Man related production. And the other thing which I was a little surprised and quite pleased about was that the film is going to be based on the play of The Elephant Man, which was written by Bernard Pomerantz, and it became a hit on both the West End and Broadway stage after it was premiered in 1977, and probably one of the most... One of the most popular stagings of the play was when David Bowie was on stage playing Joseph Merrick. So if this is going to be a very, very different approach to it, I think I'll give it a chance, and I'll see if it turns out as good as what, well, they're certainly hoping to be. So look out for that one. I don't think it's actually gone before the cameras yet. Well, there you go. I can be wrong. The other item I had to talk about was there was yet another of these look-alike contests which took place. This one in London. And this took place just outside the Prince Charles Cinema in the West End. And it was a Nicolas Cage lookalike competition where there are about 100 contestants, and you could go as, you know, your favourite Nick Cage look. So there were people in Con Air vests and probably carrying small toy bunnies with them as well. But the winner was one in a Raising Arizona outfit. So that's Hawaiian shirt and jeans. And the winner was, let me get his name here, Daniel Breuer. Daniel Breuer won, and his prize for winning the competition was a year of membership to the Prince Charles Cinema, which has... a life membership of the Prince Charles Cinema. But as the cinema's future is very much in doubt at the moment, I'm not sure how much of a prize that might be. Not that I'm saying the Prince Charles should not survive and prosper, as it is one of the best cinemas, I think, in the country. Well, trailer trash, and I've been scratching around for trailers, and something I'm constantly getting bamboozled by is all of these fake news trailers, films that don't exist or haven't even been shot yet. And there's two which have been turning up online over the past week, which I keep seeing. The first one is a film called Thing 2. So it's an AI-made mock-up of a sequel to John Carpenter's The Thing, with a CGI'd version of Kurt Russell as Snake, as McCreary, growling away in the snow, but not looking as though it's 40 years since we left him sitting there with his flamethrower, wondering if the other guy was the thing, or if MacReady was the thing. It's completely fake, so don't get your hopes up that there's going to be a sequel, because there isn't. But it doesn't even look that good either. And the other one, which is everywhere, is the one for Christopher Nolan's new film, The Odyssey, which is a adaptation of Homer's The Odyssey, with Matt Damon as Odysseus, and a very, very starry cast. But again, don't be suckered in by this either. Those keen-eyed of you will immediately see that one of the big scenes that the trailer shows you is, in fact, the arena scene from Gladiator 2, which took place when they filled it with water and had some Roman warships slug it out. That's there. There's some pretty nifty, or I should say nasty CGI mock-ups of lead actors on bad heads on the wrong bodies. But again, Nolan only started shooting this back in February, and they're expecting there might be a trailer, an initial teaser trailer in July, and the film isn't scheduled as yet to be released until July 2026. So all of you Nolan fans out there are just going to have to wait a tiny bit longer. Right, let's start our odyssey through the music and work of Philip Glass. And I'm going to kick off with a piece from the first feature film that he scored, which was Koyaanis Kwatsi. And this was the first of three films in a trilogy, the Kwatsi trilogy, by Gregory Reggio, which were documentaries about man's impact on the planet. And Koyaanis Kwatsi was the first of these. And the word comes from the Hopi language, which is a Native American language in the U.S. Southwest, which is Hopi, and Navajo tribes have used this language. And Koyaanis Kwatsi means world out of balance. And this particular piece is called Vessels. So there's no narrative to these films. They are just images put together to put over a sense of each of the film's underlying message. And this one is very much about how the first world and the technology, the consumerism of the first world impacts the natural world. So this is the first of today's tracks from Philip Glass, and this is Vessels.
Oh,
Vessels from Koyaanisqatsi by Philip Glass, and you're listening to the film show on Sheffield Live. As I was saying before we played that number, Glass's music is often associated with the minimalist form of music, built up from very repetitive phrases and motifs. The structure of his music is, and is sometimes taken the mickey out of, as being just the same thing over and over again. Well, I don't mind that myself, but I was just losing myself in that particular piece when Paul and Julie were just leaving the studio, and Paul just popped his head round the door and said, "Is this Philip Glass?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "It's a bit fast for him, isn't it?" So there you go. We really are going through the gamut of Philip Glass music here. There. We'll move on to our next piece. As I say, we won't be doing a huge amount of chat this week, but the next piece is from a film for which Glass got an Academy Award nomination for Martin Scorsese's Kundun, Scorsese's film about the life of the Dalai Lama. And this then is it's a shorter piece, this one, but this is Sand Masara from Kundun.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live, and that was Sand Mandala from the soundtrack of Kundun. As I've said, we're having a bit of a Philip Glass lunchtime this week. My next track is from what is for me my favourite Glass soundtrack, which is the score he composed for Paul Schrader's Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters, which was a film that Paul Schrader made almost 40 years ago now, which was very unusual, and it was a Hollywood movie. It was produced by Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas, and it was all in Japanese. So a subtitled movie being made by a Hollywood studio, a relatively rare thing. And it was about the life of the Japanese author, actor, and political activist Yukio Mishima, who was quite notorious in his time for his at times quite shocking fiction, which really played on a lot of Mishima's own erotic fantasies. And as his career moved on, he became increasingly right-wing and nationalistic, ending in an attempt to instigate a rebellion in Japan with a group of avid followers of his, which failed miserably. But because after the failure of that attempt, Mishima publicly committed seppuku in front of news cameras and crowds. And he remains a very, very divisive but powerful figure within Japanese culture. And this particular track is called Runaway Horses. And I think it really uses the power of Glass's repetitive nature of his music to build up to a number of crescendos throughout the piece. This is a long one. So Runaway Horses from Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters. Thank you. was a sudden finish. Runaway Horses there from Philip Glass's score for Paul Schrader's Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters. I actually love that particular number for doing the ironing too. I can get through a couple of shirts during that and they look immaculate by the time I'm finished. Steam iron, big clouds of steam rising up as you reach those musical crescendos throughout it. Right then, right, reviews this week. I haven't been to the cinema because the two films that were out, I was considering them, but then I thought, oh, have I really got the will? Paolo Sorrentino's Path and Hope opened this week. And as you know, or maybe not, I spent a couple of weeks back looking, in fact, watching six Sorrentino films in the space of a week. And although I do love his stuff, I just found it a bit wearying. And then I saw the headline on The Guardian's review of it, which says, Paolo Sorrentino contrives a facile, bikini-clad self-parody. And, yeah, I just couldn't see myself sitting for another 2 hours of gorgeous Italian models gyrating around swimming pools. So I left it. Similarly, should I go and see Thunderbolts, even though I haven't gone to see a Marvel film for ages? And Florence Pugh is a pretty good actress. But I just started reading the review and there were all these names and all these characters that I've never heard of. I thought, well, I'm just going to be completely lost here. I decided to give that one a miss as well. So did I see anything? Well, I did, but I didn't leave the house. If you were listening last week, we were talking about the Netflix CEO, Ted Sarandos, talking about how cinema is not going to last for much longer because all people want to do is to sit at home and stream, which is exactly what I did this week. But talking about films and people watching films as product and consumers. And Netflix were unleashing one of their self-made films on an unsuspecting public or bunch of consumers, Havoc, which is a new film with Tom Hardy, and it's an all action shoot 'em up at such a hectic scale. It was directed by the Welsh director Gareth Evans, who made quite a name for himself a couple of years back when he made The Raid and The Raid 2, which were two pretty tremendous action movies. And so Havoc is trying to follow in their footsteps, and it doesn't really do it. Havoc has got to be the most soulless, uninvolving waste of money that I've seen in quite some time. Tom Hardy is a rough, tough policeman who's sort of involved with some shady dealings with a big city politician and some crooked cops who have done a drug deal that has gone wrong. It's so tiresome. I don't think I can even talk about the plot anymore, what there is of it. It's at such a hectic pace that it's hard to discern what is going on. And it's heavily CGI'd and it is terrible CGI. Noggin the Nog had more movement to it than what this has. And the gun battles are just ridiculous. Literally thousands of rounds being fired off in them. And when people do get hit, it's that balletic dance they do is blood squibs explode all over their bodies. I was so tired by the end of it. In fact, I couldn't even do it in one sitting. I think it was two or three sittings I had to suffer to get through to the end of it. There wasn't one single character in the film that I had any interest in at all. It's set around Christmas. Well, you know that because there's a Christmas tree in some rooms for some facile reasoning. And then I just did a bit of reading up on it. And in fact, the film has been sitting there since 2021, where they finished shooting it, and has been subject to numerous reshoots, re-edits, for it to finally be, well, it almost doesn't feel as though it's been released. It's just been dumped on Netflix. You look at it and think, well, where is this supposed to be? It's an American city. But the one thing which I did find quite nice about it was all shot in Cardiff. And parts of Cardiff were CGI'd to look like a Gotham City sort of doer American urban environment. If you really have the patience to sit through this, well, all I can say is good luck to you. I really was finding it very hard. And as much as I like Tom Hardy, this was enough. Okay. I'm going to calm myself down now with some more Philip Glass music. So this is a number from the second Quatsy documentary, Poa Quatsy, which means life in transition. And I'm just going to tee up the next track, so bear with me. Okay, so here we go with Sarah Pallada from Poa Quatsy. Yeah. another fast one. Well, you could also think about, with the what I've played so far, it would seem that Glass pretty much just ambles around with documentaries, art house movies, and doesn't really get down and dirty with any popular multiplex-type movies, but he does. And the next track is from a score he did from one of the great horror movies of the 1990s, Candyman. And you have to remember, go to a mirror right now, look into it. Candyman. 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 Did you say it one more time? I certainly hope for your sake you didn't. Otherwise, you might be getting a unexpected visitor later this evening. Right then, rounding up the show. Next week, the new Nicolas Cage movie, The Surfer, starts from Friday. But if you want to get in and see it early, There is actually a screening at The Light on Monday at 8 o'clock, so you can be the envy of all your friends by catching that before everyone else does. Also at The Light next week, they've got a screening every day of the re-release of the remastered, restored pop-tastic movie Slade in Flame, which was made at the height of Slade's popularity in the mid-70s, and tells a story very much like how Slade came to be big in British pop music, but also with a nice roster of edgy actors such as Tom Conti, Johnny Shannon and Alan Lake, mucking up things with a bit of underworld nonsense as well. So that's well worth a viewing. So I'm going to finish off with the end credits this time from Errol Morris's The Thin Blue Line, a film which looked at the case of Randall Adams, a prisoner in a Texas jail who had been convicted of murder, which all the evidence, when put together, showed he hadn't. And Morris's film initiated a move to get Adams's case looked at again, and he was eventually freed. So that's it from me this week. We'll be back next week. The two of us will be here. I hope you've enjoyed this little run around with Philip Glass. We'll probably be back with Nick Cave and William Shatner next week. So have a great bank holiday weekend, and listen to us again next week. Enjoy your movies.